Michelle Faber, Less Than Perfect. Lachlan was a detective, 18 years old, no educational qualifications, two big bony fists. He had tried stacking pallets, but it didn't suit his nature, so he was a detective. The pay wasn't great, the hours could be better, but he had no dependents and a sleek new car with automatic windows and a CD player. Criminals watch out, Lachlan's about. Of course, criminals never suspected Lachlan was about. That was the whole point. They were always amazed when he caught them, as if they would have expected a detective to look like Columbo, with a raincoat and a cigarette, which just proved how stupid they were. Smoking wasn't allowed for a start. The golden rule of being a detective was, trust no one. Criminals came in all shapes, all ages, all sizes, all sexes. Both sexes, that is. From a distance, through a dawdling cluster of other bodies, Lachlan saw Mrs. Weymouth coming towards him. She was immaculate as always, her dyed auburn hair held in place by spray and metal clips. She hadn't seen him yet. Her attention was on a sheath of paper she held in her hands as she walked. Despite his grudge against her, he had to admire the way she could move so confidently, even on high heels, with her legs constricted in a tight knee-length skirt and a matronly bosom that made her top-heavy. Her ugly square face was uglier for frowning as she read the papers in her hands, yet she moved like a model. When she was close enough for him not to hit any innocent bystanders, he shot her in the chest with the magnum. The impact lifted her out of her strapless black shoes, tossing her body through the air like a string bag of fruit. She landed with a smack on the polished floor, chest pumping blood, a burst container. He shot her once more to make sure, and her flaccid body slid along the floor on its own juice. "I'd like a word with you, Lachlan," said Mrs. Weymouth, drawing abreast with him near the fresh fruit and vegetables. "Yes," Lachlan responded, his voice a discreet murmur. All around him in the supermarket aisle, the mass of humanity was shambling by in a weary pursuit of all the good things in life. Reluctantly, Lachlan took his eyes off them, knowing that for some, the lure of low cost was not as attractive as no cost at all. Mrs. Weymouth seemed unconcerned by what evil misdeeds might be going on behind her back. Instead, she reached down into Lachlan's shopping trolley and fetched out a single banana, one of several he had only just put in there. She held it up in the air between them and squeezed its yellow shaft with her hard, crimson-nailed fingertips. "Yes," he prompted her. "It's soft," she told him, squeezing the day-glow skin over and over. "See? Soft inside." "I don't examine them," Lachlan protested mildly. "I just chuck 'em in." "That's exactly what I mean," said Mrs. Weymouth, her voice tight with irritation. "You throw them into the trolley. I've seen you do it. Bananas, apples, peaches even. Then later, when you put them back, they're bruised. Next day, they're history." Lachlan wished she had talked quieter. It would be just like her, unfair bitch, to blow his cover and then expect him to improve his detection rate. "Are you saying," he dared to challenge, "that all the fruit here is perfect until I touch it?" Mrs. Weymouth sighed ostentatiously, her eyes half closed. Her eyelids had about 100 wrinkles on them. She was as old as his foster mum. Older, even. "We do our best," she said. "So do I, Mrs. Weymouth," said Lachlan, turning his face away from her in a gesture he hoped might remind her of the unsupervised multitudes overrunning the store. "I've got to keep my eyes on everybody. Sometimes maybe I'm looking so hard, what I'm putting in the trolley gets a bit of a bump." But Mrs. Weymouth wasn't finished with him yet. "I saw a packet of chocolate roulettes you put back on the shelf yesterday," she said, "half squashed. The damage was caused by the sharp edge of a tin or such like while in your trolley. No customer is going to buy those roulettes now. They'll choose a packet that's perfect. The damaged one will end up in the clearance racks and we'll lose money on it. Lachlan leaned on the crossbar of his trolley and stared her straight in the eye. "So sue me," he said. Then aloud, "Sorry, it won't happen again." She nodded and turned on her ridiculous heels. He let her go. She wasn't worth the ammo. He had work to do. All day, Lachlan walked the aisles of the supermarket, taking items off the shelves, loading them into his trolley, moving on. Then, one by one, he would put the items back, as if he changed his mind or discovered he couldn't afford them. All day, as he played this mindless game of selection and deselection, he watched the shoppers, appraising their clothing, scrutinising their hands, reading their faces. In this fluorescent fairyland of unbeatable offers, friendly service, and loyalty schemes, hordes of would-be thieves were in constant motion, sniffing for their opportunity. Lachlan couldn't hope to catch them all, but he could catch some. As soon as he had a suspect, he would follow at a discreet distance. It was easier to spot someone who was thinking of stealing something than someone who had already done it. So usually when he followed someone, he could expect to catch them in the act. He'd been in this game a long time now, and he knew a thing or two. No one ever stole suddenly, on impulse, innocent up until the moment temptation whispered. They all came into the store intending to steal. It was just a matter of what and when. You could see it on their faces, guilty as sin from the word go. Like any detective, Lachlan found the wiles of his quarry both impressive and pathetic. There really was no limit to what people would try. He had had a guy with half a watermelon dangling between his legs, in a special sling pinned to his trousers and hidden by a long overcoat. He had had an old lady with a pair of raw trout in her handbag. He had had plenty of women hugely pregnant with disposable nappies rustling as they moved. He had had a guy with combat trousers, all the pockets bulging so hard with Pilsner cans he could barely walk. He had had a guy nudging a frozen Christmas turkey along the floor to the cigarette kiosk, then kicking it like a football towards the exit. Mostly people would attempt smaller thefts with suppler gestures. A tin of herring slipped into a coat pocket. A tiny bottle of vanilla essence hidden in the palm. A chocolate bar up the sleeve. There were signs everywhere saying, "Detectives patrol this store," but it didn't seem to make any difference. Maybe no one read those signs, the same way they didn't seem to read anything else in the store. Prices, labels, instructions, opening hours, the lot. People never seemed to have a clue where anything was, even if they were right underneath a sign telling them. They would stand for ages next to a sign saying, "Buy two, get one three," and then they'd put two in their trolley anyway. At the checkouts, they would offer loyalty cards from other supermarkets, or they'd say, "I'm sorry, I've just realised I don't have any money." Thickos, liars, trust no one. There was a girl in his sights now, and she was going to steal something for sure. She was only young, with a thick mop of unkempt golden hair and tight jeans. Her grey polyester top was loose, though, ideal for concealment. She had big eyes and lips, no makeup. Like him, she had a few pimples here and there. She was roaming all around the store, pushing her trolley down the middle of the aisles. She wasn't examining the products on the shelves, she was examining the aisles and the people. Was she looking for someone? No way. There was a look people got on their faces when they were searching for someone they knew, someone they'd agreed to meet up with. This girl didn't have that look. She didn't care who any of the other shoppers were, he could see that. She was looking for an empty aisle. Round and round the store she went, like a rat in a maze. He followed her, half a dozen steps behind. Despite his awkward gait, which used to trip him up when he had been younger and less experienced, he pushed his trolley swiftly and smoothly. The girl was never out of his sight for longer than a few seconds. Sometimes she entered an aisle, sometimes she just glanced into it and passed it by for the next one along. The aisles she didn't bother with were always the ones that had several other shoppers in them. She came to rest at last in the toiletries. Lots of people stole stuff here. Mostly the more expensive brands of toothpaste, deodorants, lip salves. Lachlan used lip salves himself, because his top lip was prone to cracking, and his choice of brand was the same one that he'd caught several people stealing. Thieves went for quality, but quality cost them dear if Lachlan was on the case. This girl wasn't interested in toiletries, however. She already had what she wanted in her trolley. It was a long, narrow, refrigerated dessert. Some sort of blueberry or apple Danish packaged in a silver tinfoil tray. She fetched it out, holding it vertically in her fingers, held like that, side on to his gaze. It looked like a musical instrument, like one of those recorders he'd been excused from playing at school. The girl looked right and left, slowly enough for him to melt out of eyeshot at the crucial instant. Then she leaned close to the shelves, as if straining to read the minuscule guarantees printed on a packet of something or other. If not completely satisfied, blah, 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 this does not affect your statutory rights. What were statutory rights anyway? The right to remain silent? The right to one phone call? Yes, she was doing it now. A gyration of both elbows and a backward thrust of her pear-shaped buttocks. Lachlan pushed his trolley round the corner, letting it squeak all it liked. The girl turned to face him, her face blank and arrogant like a Hollywood movie actress. She'd done a good job with the Danish, he had to admit. It wasn't poking out through the fabric of her top, although her breasts certainly were. He had seen plenty of people with products falling out of their clothing as they walked, smack onto the floor at their feet. That wouldn't happen to this girl. She had stowed the Danish inside her jeans, inside the waistband, right next to her flesh, probably. Her sex parts were liable to go numb if she didn't make her getaway pronto. "Excuse me, miss," he said. "Would you mind coming with me for a minute?" She stiffened, folding her arms across her front. "Why?" she said. "I think you know why," he said without emotion. Leaving her trolley, she walked beside him along the aisle, her face ghastly pale. He took her to the storage bay behind the delicatessen and into a little windowless room. There was a desk, a chair, a telephone, a filing cabinet, and a fire extinguisher. The bare essentials. Lachlan closed the door. "Okay," he said. "I think we both know what you've got inside your trousers." Sullenly, the girl reached inside her clothing and pulled out the Danish. "Have a seat," said Lachlan, indicating the desk, "while I phone the police." "Please, no," she begged in a small voice. Lachlan looked her up and down. She had the classic gun to her head expression and sweat glistened on her clasped hands. "There's one thing you can do to make me forget the whole thing," he said. "I think you can guess what it is." In silence, she undressed, pulling her top over her head, exposing her white midriff, slightly marked in red by the sharp tinfoil edges of the Danish. Her breasts, barely contained in a faded flesh-coloured bra, were as big as Mrs. Weymouth's, a strange sight on such a young body. She left the bra on, but took her jeans and panties off in one motion, hooking her thumbs into the two sets of waistbands. Her pubic hair was golden. "The bra too," he said. "Please," she said. "Do it," he said. She unhooked her bra and finally her breasts were revealed, round and perfect like pale pink melons. "Turn around," he said, "and put your hands against the wall." He grabbed the cheeks of her bottom and exposed her slit. His erect penis slid in easily and he ejaculated in about 2 seconds. The girl was wheeling her trolley towards the checkouts now. He'd better close in fast or she'd get away. It was company policy not to apprehend shoplifters at the checkouts to save other customers embarrassment. "Excuse me, miss," he said. "What for?" she challenged him, sullen, like his vision of her. "Would you mind accompanying me?" he said. She frowned and bit down hard on her lower lip. She was much better looking than he had thought. She had long blonde eyelashes, which were only visible at close quarters. Her eyes weren't a standard colour, and they shone with feelings he couldn't identify. Then suddenly, awkwardly, she smiled and reached inside her clothing. The stolen Danish was yanked forth, momentarily distending the fabric of her top, like that alien baby bursting out of somebody's stomach in that alien movie. "Here," she said, holding the somewhat buckled package out to him. "Sorry." Nonplussed, he took hold of it. The tinfoil part was chilly and damp, but the cardboard lid was already warm. Warm from the heat of her flesh. "Look, I've given it back, okay?" she said nervously, tossing her hair off her forehead. "Let's just forget about it all. I can't afford it anyway." Lachlan examined the Danish at a glance. "No one will want to buy this now," he informed her. "Its edges are all crumpled. It's as good as wrecked. We'll lose money on it." Anger and anxiety flashed across the girl's face. "Jesus, what does a crappy frozen dessert mean to you?" Lachlan tossed it back into her trolley, unmoved. "It's for sale. You didn't pay for it. That's theft. My job is to hand you on to the police. I'm just doing my job." She stared him straight in the eyes, defiantly at first, then with a slow flush of fear as she glimpsed the impenetrable, steely sureness in him. "Please," she said, licking her lips in naked distress. "I've been done for this twice already. Once more and they'll put me away for sure. I just got hungry for something sweet, that's all. I don't have much money." She gestured limply. "It's hard sometimes." He drew a deep breath. How to explain to her that life was tough for everyone? Everyone in the whole wide, dirty world. A bit of slack in one place resulted in a tightening of the screws further on down the line. If he let her go, Mrs. Weymouth would probably find out about it and he'd lose his job. Then before he knew it, he'd be no better off than this girl was now. He'd lose his car and everything. Conceivably, he and this girl would end up standing next to each other at the job centre, looking lost and hopeless. There'd be a position going as a store detective, and she'd probably get it, because women got everything nowadays. "I've got a job to do," was how he summed up on these complexities. "Come with me, please." "Wait a minute," she said, her hands trembling as she stepped closer to him. I could let you have sex with me." "What?" said Lachlan. "I beg your pardon?" Her eyes were shiny, darting back and forth like fish. Against the odds, though, no one had steered into their aisle yet. They were still alone, and she, so close to him that he could see the pores in her skin and the frightened pulse beat in her pale throat, she raised her whisper loud above the muzak, deadly serious. "I could let you fuck me in the car park. In your car. I know you've got one. I've seen you driving around the town. Your sound system must be about 2 million watts. "Look," he said, his voice hoarse all of a sudden. "I could take all of my clothes off," she hissed urgently. "You'd see everything. I'd do whatever you wanted." He cleared his throat, blushing hot. "I can't just walk out of the store," he said. "It's not allowed." "Jesus, don't you have tea breaks or something?" she squeaked. Almost hysterical, then got hold of herself. "Whenever," she assured him. "Just come out whenever you can and I'll meet you there." He gaped at her in disbelief and she stared back at him imploringly. An old lady trundled around the corner, took one look at them and passed by, embarrassed. Supermarket life was circling them, waiting for their aisle to be cleared of intimacy and returned to normal. "You must think I'm stupid," said Lachlan. "No, look," she said, in desperation. "Look, I'll give you this." She delved a small pink hand into a pocket of her jeans and pulled out a key ring with several keys jingling off it. "It's all my keys," she assured him breathlessly, holding them up by the plastic Bart Simpson trinket that linked them. "The keys to everything, my front door, my back door, everything. This little one's for my bike. It's parked just outside. You can see it through the window there. Look." With his narrowed eyes, he followed where she was pointing, and sure enough, there was a bicycle blurrily visible through the wall of the plate glass, just under the giant official letters saying, "For all your needs." "I can't do without these keys. Do you understand?" she pleaded. "I can't even get home. I have to have them." She pressed the keys against his dangling hand and let them go. Instinctively, he grabbed them rather than let them fall to the ground. It was a reflex action. She put both her soft palms on his right shoulder and lifted herself on tiptoes to murmur in his ear, "You got me right where you want me. I'll be waiting." And she ran off, leaving her trolley behind. Lachlan steadied himself for a few moments, aware that inside his clothes he was soaked with perspiration. He wiped his forehead and mouth, inspected his sleeve. The news was not good. God knows what the customers would think, seeing him in this state. The first thing to do was to get rid of the Danish. If Mrs. Weymouth saw it, she'd go ballistic. Furtively, heart-pounding, he rushed the damp and damaged specimen to the frozen goods section, fearing the old woman's eyes on him with every step. He hid the Danish under the others of its kind, piling the straight and perfect ones on top of it, three layers deep. This done, undetected, he relaxed a little. The light in the supermarket seemed less harsh, the central heating less high. Mrs. Weymouth was at the far end of the store, pretending to care about a disabled shopper. The clock above the community notice board said 6:38. Another hour and a half, and he was a free man. For the next little while, he walked the girl's trolley around the supermarket, putting items back on the shelves. Spaghetti, bread, peanut butter, sugar puffs, milk, sanitary pads. This last one made him wonder. He wasn't sure if he could cope with a vagina that was bleeding. Even if it was the only one he could get hold of, it wasn't clean somehow. At 8 o'clock, as the last shoppers were being ushered outside of the supermarket into the summer dusk, Lachlan was already outside, standing right next to the girl's bicycle, waiting. Not born yesterday, he had a sick feeling she wouldn't show up. But still he hoped she might. He ran his sharp eyes back and forth across all the cars parked in neat rows, in case she was hiding amongst them. He remembered her very well, physically. A single glimpse of her face or her behind would have been enough to identify her, if she'd been anywhere about. As more and more cars pulled away, there were fewer places where a girl could be hiding. Lachlan consulted the watch on his big, bony wrist. 8 minutes has passed, in what had felt like 20 seconds. Nothing sexual is going to happen now. Golden rule, trust no one. He tried to imagine some way he could get revenge. God, how she must despise him if she was willing to lose her bike just to avoid a few seconds of unwanted attention. Maybe she was scared of him. That would be tragic if that was all it was. It could have been a fantastic experience. She would have got her keys back. He would have found out what intercourse was like. She might even have enjoyed it. There was nothing wrong with his sex organs, that was for sure. What was he going to do with her bike? He couldn't take it away with him. Sell it, maybe. As long as he didn't get into trouble with the police. Like all private detectives, he had an uneasy relationship with the boys in blue. One of them had stopped him once. One of those long, sleepless nights when he had taken the car out for a drive, CDs belting out into the lonely dark. The cop had told him it was a mystery how a moron like Lachlan had ever been judged fit for a car licence. That was the sort of crack you didn't forget in a hurry. Lachlan looked at the girl's bicycle again. His car, he suddenly remembered, didn't have a roof rack. Never mind the bike, then. He could maybe use the chain and the padlock for something. Keep something of his own safe from theft, something he hadn't thought of yet. Also, without the chain, her bike would most likely get stolen during the night, which would serve her right. He slipped the smallest of the keys into the bike's padlock and twisted. Through his fingers, he could sense something wasn't right. Nothing clicked or felt open. "Hey!" a male voice shouted from not far away. "Hey!" Lachlan tried to pull the key out, but it was gripped tight in the lock. An athletic-looking man with grey hair and paint-spattered training clothes had set two evenly weighted shopping bags down on the asphalt and began to stride towards Lachlan from the vaulted entrance of the supermarket. Panicking, Lachlan let the keys go and ran to his car. It was instantly identifiable by the silver Demister strips on the back window, and the little Celtic flag on the aerial, and the big warning stickers about what would happen if anyone tried to break in and steal the potent black metallic speakers within. A new addition to the vehicle's distinguishing features, however, was one that Lachlan noticed only as he was struggling to unlock the door. All along the driver's side, gouged deeply into the paintwork with a sharp implement, was the word "wanker." Finally, bursting into the car, he slammed the door behind him and started the motor. With scarcely a second's pause, he began to reverse the car, dizzily relieved to find that the bicycle's owner had given up on the pursuit and was returning to his shopping bags. Not worth it. Lachlan pulled on the brake and sat tight, loath to be pushed now that the heat was off. The bicycle man cycled away. Lachlan memorised his distinguishing features for future reference. After a few more minutes, the car park light, synchronised with the sunset, glowed all around him. Mrs. Weymouth and the big boss were locking the supermarket's entrance inside a big trellis of iron bars. The big boss pointed a device at a hidden alarm and pressed the trigger. Then he and Mrs. Weymouth walked to the same car. When they'd driven off, Lachlan reversed fully into the empty expanse of tarmac. The keys to everything lay discarded near the bike stands, for the girl to retrieve if she was still out there somewhere, spying on the scene, waiting for him to make his move. Blinking away tears, Lachlan edged his precious injured vehicle towards the exit, conscious that if he allowed his anger and his hurt to get on top of him, he might crash the car in the dangerous traffic beyond the supermarket and lose more than he had lost already. In the rearview mirror, his own face was reflected back at him, undisguised, the hair lip vivid and glistening above his malformed teeth. Looking right and left, forwards and backwards, he indicated to the world where he was meaning to go. Then, gunning the engine, he followed through and left them all for dead.